This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
That's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham, get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening and enjoy the pod. Got married?
Oh, you've done a lot more than me.
How are you, Dan?
Very well, thanks.
Good. We are joined by Greg Lee. You are the new editor of Set Pieces.
That's correct,
that
yeah.
Correct? So that's very new, isn't it? That's within the last few weeks.
About a month now, I think, yeah.
So. What is it that you are doing now? Because it's quite different. Set Pieces is a very different sort of website to a general day-to-day football website, isn't it? It's a lot more features-based.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was set up almost as an alternative to the sites that cover the day-to-day action, the Premier League kind of results, previews, that type of thing. So we only kind of publish 3 or 4 articles a week, but it's always features. It's always about the quality of the story rather than necessarily a big name player, big name team. I'd say maybe the stories around football as well, more than on the pitch happening. So recently we've done stuff on the women's team from Yorkshire, went to Palestine for a kind of secret football tour, which was really interesting. So stuff like that.
It's like a magazine sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which is a really nice opportunity, really, because get to read some really interesting stuff that you wouldn't otherwise come across. So.
Player ratings. Do you want some player ratings?
Yeah, not really.
From Tottenham.
Obviously, we go to
I will do that.
ESPN for...
Poch quotes that are on 5 or 6 different sites and Twitter feeds.
Exactly,
sorry,
yeah.
really trashing you at the moment. Sorry. The Set Pieces was... the home of the Championship Manager revamp, wasn't it? Or the revisit by Ian McIntosh, wasn't it? That was great. And that was the first thing I ever read on there. And I think they'd only been going a couple of months before that came up. And that seemed to get a lot of traction with people because it was so popular as a game and as, like...
Yeah, definitely.
It was really well written, obviously, as well. So, I mean, if there's anything to start with... And if you're out there and you haven't read anything on Set Pieces yet, I would say that's a really good starting point. It's really good fun. But what have you done so far? What have your first few weeks been like? What can we expect? What does Greg Lee bring
to the Set Pieces? Big question. I think it's a really boring answer, I realise. But it's kind of more of the same, I think, of what the site has established itself to do. As I say, that storytelling aspect will remain. I think we're going to try and... do kind of a few more events. There's a football manager tournament as well as the Championship Manager stuff last year, so stuff like that as well outside of the site, but the site is always the main thing. And yeah, just a case of continuing
podcast
good work that Tom's now pointing at Dan, giving him another it could be
another paycheck,
bit of a saturated market.
But you're also a Crystal Palace fan, aren't you?
Yes.
And those who listened, we were just saying before we started recording, it's nearly a year since you came on.
Which is ridiculous,
Which is really fun. I think it was just before we won 1-0 at Selhurst Park in April. So similar, well, exactly the same scoreline, similar circumstances as well, with a late winner after a quite scrappy, not highest quality game of football. I guess we should start with you. How were you disappointed as a fan to have got out of that, having lost it, or in the manner that you did, or do you think that you were warranting a point?
No, I think Tottenham deserved to win the game. Really, I think the fact the goal came really late was quite disheartening. Really, just because at that stage you think you might hold out, whether it's deserved or not. At that stage of the game, when it's level, you against anyone really, you've put in a good effort, and you maybe think that will be rewarded, but. I think when you look back at the chances that Tottenham had, it could easily have been, that goal could have easily come a lot earlier. So a bit of a shame, and it's a bit of a cliche, but it's not these games that will decide teams like Palace's fate. So disappointing, obviously, but really I think it was probably a fair result.
It is games like this that are going to decide top four, though, really, isn't it? It's particularly for Spurs now. We've seemed to have got the so-called bigger teams out of the way, particularly in that 2 or 3 week stretch we've just come out of. It felt like we were at the end of that, though, didn't it? Very, like, the performance was very kind of...
It's very Sunday morning, wasn't it? Yeah, it felt like one of those Sunday league games where everyone's hungover and it just doesn't quite get going.
There was a point when Eriksen had a shot and it was like a toddler hitting the ball.
In the second half, yeah.
He
had an off game. There were quite a few off games, and it did feel like the end of that run against Juve, United, Liverpool and Arsenal, where a lot of the players played all those games, put a lot into them, and it was understandable that it was a bit flatter. But then, as Greg says, I think it was one of those where Spurs were kind of on it in the first 15 minutes, and it felt like if they had got an early goal, which they have a few times this year, obviously, you know, United being the best example, a very early goal, they might have gone on to just control the game in a much more comfortable manner. Instead of desperately scrapping, looking for opportunities, they might have just controlled it in a more relaxed way and made kind of more organic chances, if you like.
But they were there, though, weren't they? I mean, Kane's missed...
Kane really had an off day, didn't he? Yeah. And I know he scored.
Yeah.
And it says everything about him that he scored having missed those three or four chances, particularly the one on the volley from about 4 yards.
Mm. Where to I feel miss like the actually, far post as well. Like, he's not just sort of stabbed it wide, he's hit it a long way away.
Yeah, I feel like it was actually one of those moments where he kind of counted against him that he's so two-footed. Because if you're like an obvious right-footer, you just swing at that. But he kind of tries to go with it with his left, which is, well, supposed to be his weaker foot. And I think he got caught in two minds slightly, and his body shape wasn't right, was it? And he just ended up skewing it right back across the face.
It's just odd, yeah. But like I say, he did score our winner, so it's not... Obviously not all bad. He got his 150th club goal, 35 for the season, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So he's equaled 35. Last season's tally with 3 months to go.
That is absurd. I mean, I think somebody put out the all-time Spurs scorers in all comps, and I think he could be second by this time next season if he's still around and stays fit.
Well, I think we're starting to get into kind of Clive Allen 49 goal season territory. Yeah. Like, is he going to break it?
Yeah, that's true.
He needs 14 more.
So there's 10 league games,
three more in the Champions League.
At least,
Spurs get
hopefully
one more at least.
Yeah.
And potentially if you're in the FA Cup, yeah. So he's really getting to that point where you do start to think, is he going to break another ridiculous record that we thought really wouldn't be broken for however long?
Is that why you've been drawing all these games in the FA Cup then, to give him more chances?
Yeah. It's funny, on a serious note, Kane does have this thing of wanting to play every single game. And I think he played against Wimbledon, didn't he?
He scored twice.
It's not beyond realms of possibility that Kane is throwing these games in the first one so that he can get another stab at keep scoring.
Fair play.
It just seems to be his mentality, I think. Strange game in a way, because you had 9 players out injured, is that right?
I think it's 12 actually. Some of those are long-term ones, so whether you count them or not for this game specifically, but
and you lost a lot of players before the end as well, didn't you? And
yeah.
I mean, it was, all things considered, it sounds like I'm being a bit of a wanker, but you put up a good fight considering it, and there were chances, but equally we were never quite comfortable. And I think that Dembele had an off game, I think Eriksen, you said, had an off game, but I think it's probably important to mention Lamela starting over Son. Were you surprised at that, and do you think that it played into your hands a little bit to have somebody who isn't quick necessarily and wants to sort of come in and create and influence play in that way rather than stretch things?
Definitely, yeah. I think Palace's intentions were pretty clear from the off, really, going to sit quite deep. And I think Tottenham did miss someone who can beat players one-on-one, can kind of provide that dash of pace that Son has done. And Son's done really well against Palace, actually, in the last few years. I think he scored 2 winning goals, including earlier this season, in those tight games, which it always seems to be when the two teams play each other. I think I think this was the sixth of the last seven games that was 1-0 to Tottenham, so it
the
really
other
has
one
been
was,
a familiar
the other one must have been the 3-1.
Yeah,
with two very late goals with Ali.
Yeah, that was when Ali scored.
Ali's won the goal and yeah. Chadley scored in stoppage time, so
yeah,
it wasn't a 3-1.
And a lot of them have been decided by Eriksen's goal last year, kind of a piece of individual brilliance or set piece. I think Wanyama scored a header at Delaney.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Son, that player who can provide that kind of little dash of speed and invention in the final third, would have been something that maybe. Well, who am I to stop Pochettino? But I think, I was pleased when I saw that lineup because I thought Spurs maybe would struggle to kind of get that last pass through in that last kind of moment.
It did look like that, Dan. I know you're the Lamella fanboy. I was going to say a Lamella fanboy, but I think you're the
I'm
one banging
sure
the drum loudest. But it was a strange decision. It looked a bit congested. Were you surprised? What's happened to Son as well? Because he seems to have. I mean, he didn't start in Juventus, and it seemed like that was a sensible decision. Lamella's defensive qualities and tenacity up front, high press, and it did work. Son played a lot of minutes and has played a lot over probably since just before Christmas when he really forced his way into the team and stayed there. But he came on a second sub after Lucas Moura, didn't he?
I mean, that's the weird thing. About a month ago, you were saying, and it wasn't without justification, that Son was the second most important player in the whole
squad
behind Kane, because he was the difference in those really tight games at Wembley when Spurs were struggling to break down defensive teams, which was not dissimilar to Sunday's game. And now suddenly he's gone from being, in your eyes, the second most important player in the squad to being the second attacker off the bench in a really tight game, which does just seem really weird. And I think Lamella was probably the right choice with hindsight in Turin, because he did add that extra kind of level of tenacity, as you said. He presses, he works really hard, he can track back the length of the pitch if he has to, which I don't think Son's quite as good at. But then I think also with hindsight, he was the wrong choice against Palace for the reasons that Greg's already outlined. He's not really a game changer. He's not going to do what Son did at Wembley, which is score a goal out of nothing to decide a really tight game. So it was a bit of a strange one, and it did look like Son's confidence took a real knock by being left out in Turin, because he was pretty poor from what I saw against Rochdale.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, but he had a bad game.
Yeah.
And I don't know, one of my colleagues who covers Spurs regularly said at the weekend that Son has to do more than anyone else to stay in the team. And I think it's a fair point. If you consider the amount of poor games that maybe Ali could get away with in that position, he could have three or four quiet games.
Or Lamella. So low to say that.
It goes without saying. You know, Lamella, Ali is an example of a player who's even above Lamella. And even Eriksen, you know, he's had quiet months. Obviously, we know how important he is. But I think Son arguably has to be at a certain level in every single game to be assured of starting the next game, which is a lot of pressure on him. And
he does frequently get there as well, so it's not.
He does, and he has obviously gone off the boil slightly from where he was about a month ago. And you know, suddenly Lucas is looking quite sharp. Lamella is obviously fit, and I know he's Marmite. Some people aren't for him, but it's suddenly a lot harder than it was for Son to get in the team.
A little kick up the arse, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, Palace are a team that seems to have a lot of quick attacking midfielders. I don't know if that's changed or not at all, but I seem to remember there being a time when you had seemingly had every sort of medium-rate winger that was pretty handy, like Punchin and Zaha and Sacco, who's
a
really massive guy that didn't
look
like a winger at all.
Mm-hmm.
With Son's situation, do you think that there's a possibility that he will react to the extra competition and the fact that he has been dropped for a couple of really important games despite his good form? Does he strike you as the sort of player that will react to that, or is it going to knock him a bit further?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think it's a case of different approaches working for different players and personalities, and I can't say I know Son's personality well enough as an outsider to really judge that. But I think it's obviously not a bad thing for any club to have options in those positions, and Pochettino, as long as he can manage them, there is a way to keep all these players happy. But I think Son has done a lot this season, and his stock's clearly risen from the start of the season. Mm. So I don't think he particularly has anything to fear by this increased competition, and he just needs those chances and to keep delivering. And then I'm sure there's a place for him in that kind of match day squad every week. So
he just looks like a nice, happy, smiley man that I'd hate to let down. Whereas if someone like Ali, who is just clearly the worst human being in the world.
Terrible.
According
Terrible.
To plenty, particularly on the BBC. Gary Lineker sent a tweet called him Divey Alley, which, I mean, even by Lineker standards is really bad.
It's such a dad joke, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is why I used to do the Hi Gary tweet, because it just... Well, that and it reeled in idiots, but...
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of those tweets. On the record, please.
I've had to retire it because he did respond to me. Once.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he quote tweeted me.
With a rolly eyes.
Yeah,
was it?
The hands up. Well,
the shrug. The shrug emoji, yeah.
The shrug emoji, and that felt like a...
That's a victory.
Yeah, that felt like a retirement sort of game for me.
Yeah.
And Shearer, sorry, just to go back to Delia. Shearer also kind of went in two-footed, which I suppose is ironic. But what is... He's actually now at the stage where any marginal decision isn't going to go for him. And I'm not saying that either of the two in the Palace game, but in future, there are going to be decisions because of the way that he plays. And he's quick and he's quick-footed and he gets in the area and he makes defenders commit themselves. He's going to have there's going to be more and more situations where that 50-50 is not going to go in his favour, is it?
Yeah, well, first thing to say is I'm very bored of this already, but I think we have to talk about it. Yeah, I think Ali's obviously earned himself a bit of a reputation, and I think there have been incidents, and I think the Hennessy incident was another one, because he does go down before there's contact. And he kind of almost like knows it as well, the way he just stands up and doesn't seem to protest. And I think he hasn't helped himself, let's be clear about that. But, as I think Kane has said today, as Pochettino and Hodgson said after the game, as I think Dyer said after the game, because it's Dele Alli, it now becomes this massive Ferrari, and it gets completely overblown, completely blown out of proportion, and when really there isn't much to it. I think the two incidents at Selhurst, one was probably a penalty, Van Aanholt on Alli. I thought he went basically tackled through the back of him and got the ball after he kicked Alli over. So there's a strong case there for a penalty. As I've already said, the one on Hennessy was probably a dive.
He didn't climb for it, did he?
No, that's the thing, not really. He kind of didn't react.
Because the keeper's coming through him, he's going to have to go over him. And I'm not making excuses, because he was going
to. Well,
I mean,
what
he's got to lean that way so that he doesn't leave his legs straight
for a human man
to clean through it. And he's going to go over. If he claimed for it, I'd go... Come on, mate, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think one thing Dyer said in Ali's defence that I think is interesting is that he's almost anticipating contact before it comes. Mm. And perhaps that just gets in someone's head. And I think Dyer made the case that against Liverpool, he just anticipated that Lovren was going to leave a leg in, and then Lovren pulls the leg out. Mm. And Ali's already on the way down. I think certainly against Palace, he's on the way down before he hits Hennessy. And maybe in the heat of the moment, instinctively, players just get into rhythms where they are anticipating contact. And I think it has been overblown, and I don't think it's helpful labelling him a diver and a cheat and all the kind of stuff that Shearer's been saying, because it almost begins to resemble a witch hunt. But he clearly hasn't helped himself.
You're as an opposition fan, Greg, and I guess Palace haven't really got any reason to kind of hate Ali. He's not done anything, but teams like Liverpool fans, I mean, Liverpool fans have just gone insane over the last two or three weeks, but Burnley are another one where they thought that he dived for our goal just before Christmas. And there is scrutiny on him now, and there probably always has been. He was always had a bit of a nasty streak, and diving was kind of part of it. And Poch didn't really help him out with those comments a few weeks ago about being just part of
being
cheating,
being trickery part of the game.
But as an opposition fan, are you wound up by someone like Dele Alli, or do you understand perhaps why teams are getting wound up by him?
Personally, not really. I'm not really wound up by him. It's interesting with the Alli case, because it's very similar to how Zahar is often treated by opposition fans. I think there's a lot of accusations similarly levelled against him. I think similarly it's soft and unfair, but there have been moments where he probably has gone down too easily, which again, when you hear constantly as well, if you're not seeing these players every week and these incidents do come up, you hear the pundits discussing it, you can often form a certain image of someone which maybe isn't 100% accurate. So in a way, I can understand why opposition fans would get wound up if the narrative kind of is always being reinforced, rightly or wrongly. Yeah, it's not something that particularly bothers me. I think, interestingly, yesterday I sit right behind that goal where both of the incidents were, and I thought, at the time, I thought the Van Aanholt one was a dive and the Hennessy one was a penalty, but yeah, right. It turns out the other way around. But I think they were both, and with the Hennessy one as well, I think, to be fair to him, as you were mentioning, it's, I think that one probably was one where he was trying to evade the contact. He obviously goes down, but he's anticipating the contact, should I say, rather than really kind of going out to win a penalty in that one. So
that's the thing now, is that if you, it's like Ashley Young. Ashley Young's probably not had an incident of diving in a few seasons, I'd say. But if he was to do it in United's next game,
exactly, yeah,
everyone's going to be saying, "Oh, that's, you know, that's typical
classic
Ashley Young."
Classic,
yeah. Actually, yeah. And that's gonna, and Ali's 21, and that's the die's been cast a little bit for him already, which is a bit of a shame, because he doesn't seem the sort that let it get to him. In fact, he seems to sort of probably relish it a little bit.
Yeah, I remember
to relish that a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, he is a pantomime villain, isn't he? And he gets, it's almost like that year Beckham had after the 98 World Cup, where he was kind of booed at every ground in the country. I can't remember a game where Dele Alli hasn't been booed recently. Yeah. And the only team that had any justification to do it was Wimbledon, because he used to play for MK Dons. Literally everyone else just boos him because he's booable. But I think he seems to enjoy it. And actually, when he came on against Wimbledon to a cacophony of boos, he then nutmegged a player within about 30 seconds, which I think just sort of shows you what kind of bloke he is. He sort of almost wants to feed off it in a way, rather than let it get him down.
His entire style of play is a middle finger, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, it's exactly. To everyone. You put it very well, yeah.
Serge Aurier. Let's talk Serge.
I love him. He's so mad.
I'm worried.
He's so entertaining.
Now, first off, let's say three foul throws is a Premier League record.
Yeah. What a record as well.
What, I mean, an incredible record.
It's not going anytime soon.
I mean, there was two in five
or 10
minutes.
No,
in about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, back to back.
I mean, so I've got this thing about foul throws, or I've got this thing about refereeing, particularly in England, and foul throws that happen all the time, and all the time, at least two or three a game, and they never call them. So for it to be that obvious and that bad to be given three times, because he must have just been looking at him going, oh, come on, mate, like,
I think refs are almost embarrassed to give them, aren't they? Because like, I can't call a professional player here. But so when it's that obvious and every fan behind him is going, foul throw!
I mean, it was insane, wasn't it? And he seems to be insane. Mr. Sitter as well. It wasn't his best day.
But then actually, you know, won the corner that led to the goal.
Okay.
Made a goal-saving tackle on Sorloth, which was a really good challenge, actually, on replay. He's just, Dave Heitner did a tweet after the game just saying, I think the foul throws just add to the legend of Mad Serge. I'm kind of with him on that. He's bonkers, and I can see that he's frustrating, and I can see that if Spurs had lost that game 1-0, it would have been he would have been an easy scapegoat for the mistakes he made and the foul throws and the chances.
Might become a thing though. Might become that, because he's going to take loads of throws. Your fullbacks tend to take your throws. It could become a thing for us. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it a good thing? Like every time he picks the ball up of just taking a throw, it becomes a sort of a half celebratory thing. A bit like when Genius used to get beat the first man from a corner.
The thing is, after he did the first one, you could sort of see that it got on his head and his. You know when you're like, you're playing tennis or something, or an individual sport, and you question your own technique and you get in your own head.
Yeah.
You can sort of see that he'd got in his own head.
There's a moment in the second half as well where the ball went out, Kane was chasing it, and Kane took the throw in, which, although he was closest to the ball, it still doesn't happen that much because the striker is normally concerned with getting back in their position. Yeah. But it's almost like if someone misses two free kicks, you say, right, I'll have a go now. But you never really see the throw ins, do you?
There's definitely, he looked over. I watched it back.
Yeah.
I definitely looked over and sort of acknowledged that Oreo was jogging up low and was like, no, I'm having this.
There was only about 10 minutes left, wasn't there? Because you lose the throw, don't you? Goes to the other team. Yeah. So he's probably looking at it and thinking, there is more chance of me scoring a goal by me taking my own throw in than Serge. I don't know. I'm worried about him. I mean, the best thing that's ever happened to Kieran Trippier's stock and his career seems to be Serge Aurier's first season at Spurs, isn't it? Because Trippier's... 4 or 5 weeks ago, everyone was saying it's probably still just about Aurier. He's still a bit, you know, rusty. Yeah. Not rusty, he's a bit raw. But Trippier's just not got it in him. And then Trippier's games against Liverpool, United, Arsenal... And Juve, did he play against you?
No, it's Aurier, of course, yeah. Gave away the pen.
Well, yeah. I mean, the catalogue is starting to grow a little bit with Aurier, and it isn't with Trippier, and that...
Yeah, I mean, the Juventus miss from Higuain was a very big moment, I feel, for Serge at Tottenham. Because if Higuain scores that, and it's kind of... And Juve successfully shut up shop, and it's game over, and potentially tie over, then it would be very hard for Aurier to have come back, I think... Given the way Spurs have played in the first half, the rest of the first half, it would have been quite difficult to come back from such a mad moment. But the fact that he missed it kind of gave him a lifeline. Mm. I wouldn't say he took it again.
No, he got books in about 5 minutes of the first.
Well, I wouldn't say he kind of took it against Palace either. But I don't know. I think with Pochettino signings, you always give them, you always want to give them a year, particularly someone that came on deadline day. I think Pochettino's record at improving fullbacks is, you know, obviously exemplary. There are so many examples dating back to Southampton of how he's improved someone in that position, and I do think Serge has the raw materials to kind of be a really good Premier League right back. So I think if this time next year we're still talking about him foul throwing and giving away penalties, then yes, I'll be worried. But I do think or hope he'll come good.
I agree with Dan there on the raw ingredients are definitely there. I think, obviously, the foul throws was the embarrassing thing yesterday. But maybe more concerning was the fact that Palace were playing with Sorloth on that left flank, but obviously a centre-forward, so trying to link up with Benteke as much as he could. And a lot of Spurs attacks, particularly in the second half, the space was down the right, where there were often two-on-one situations. And Aurier's deliveries, which is obviously Trippier's kind of main standout attribute, were not great for the most part. I thought kind of hitting the first man and not really picking anyone out. There were no kind of clever cutbacks or kind of pinpoint deliveries there. So that's something that if he's going to keep Trippier out of the team as a long-term first choice, Trippier's clearly got the edge on him there at the moment.
Trippier's got the edge full stop, to be perfect.
Yeah, I think he has, yeah.
Fair play, Eric Dier, dropping back into centre-back in the absence of Vertonghen. What's up with Vertonghen?
I think apparently he just took a knock the day before.
So likely to be okay for the weekend. Probably won't play against
Play against Rochdale anyway, but hopefully okay for Huddersfield.
Yeah.
It was the first game without Dier and Alderweireld since Alderweireld joined. So for 2.5 years. Vertonghen and Alderweireld since. So first game without the Belgians since we've had two Belgians at Spurs.
That's crazy.
In the league, yeah.
They both had injury problems as well in that time. Vertonghen certainly less so.
So there were question marks, but obviously Benteke was dreadfully bad and didn't do anything.
Who did they play at left wing? Sorloth,
yeah.
He has the squarest head I've ever seen in my life.
He's very square.
Very odd. Him versus Dier was quite something. Dier looks like a Lego head, doesn't he? A bit 50p.
He does, yeah. But I thought, you know, Dier did well because obviously he would have spent most of the week, assuming Vertonghen, you know, did get injured the day before, Dier would have spent the week training to play in midfield, and he's played in midfield for the last few months, really, at least. And to slot in so easily and make quite a few...
On the left-hand side as well.
Yeah, and play with Sanchez, I think, for the first time in a two and make a few really crucial tackles. At the start of the second half, there were kind of three good tackles in quick succession from Dier. I think two on Benteke, one on Townsend, where he won the ball and Spurs were quite hard at the pitch. And yeah, I think there's no one else who can play in two positions as well as him at Spurs, and that's why, even though he's arguably the second best holding midfielder and arguably the third best centre back, he's still so important.
Yeah, it's crazy actually, isn't it, thinking of the amount of minutes that he does get for us. Andros Townsend looks great. How's he getting on? Because there's not many Spurs connections with Palace anymore. How is he getting on? Because he took a downward step to go to Newcastle when he first fell out with Poch. He went on loan to Newcastle. And then they got relegated, I think, didn't they?
He was there permanently.
Did he really?
Yeah, and he left 6 months later, permanently. Yeah.
Right, okay. So, and it was straight to Palace.
Yeah.
It's been a bit mixed, hasn't it, for Townsend since he's joined. Do you see... Because I feel like he was probably thinking that I'll go to Palace or Newcastle at the time and start performing, and then I'll work my way back up to a level that's perhaps in Europe or otherwise. How's he getting on, and do you think he's ever going to actually explode into that? Because he's just certainly behind Zaha in that sort of stake, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I remember his spell at Newcastle, from what I remember, was he scored a lot of kind of typical Townsend goals, like those long range, kind of probably the 10th time he's tried at that game, but a lot of really spectacular moments. And it's almost been the opposite at Palace, in a good way maybe, because he's quite reliable, he works really hard, he carries the ball quite well, he has cut down on that kind of shooting too much, to an extent. still reliable, obviously, but so he's been kind of reliable, but in terms of like the star quality and the moments of magic, Zaha is miles ahead of him. And yeah, when you put it in kind of an international context, because he was a really big favourite of Hodgson's when he was England manager, and there was a time where he was starting games for England. It's hard to imagine that now. I don't know whether he'll get in the squad, let alone obviously not the team this summer. So yeah, his career probably hasn't pushed on to the extent he would have liked, but he's still got time. And I think Palace fans generally quite like him because, as I say, he works really hard. Just lacking kind of that end product. One goal this season, for example, which when Benteke is not scoring, Zaha's injured, you really need players like him to be stepping up a bit more, I think, with those contributions. But yeah, can't fault his effort, and does bring some valuable stuff to the team as well.
Got hair now as well.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
He looks quite corporate, someone says to me. He's
corporate, yeah.
He's got like quite it. Like a suit haircut.
I thought he was bald. I thought he was. But as in bald.
Yeah, exactly.
Did he have the old plugs?
I think so.
Tottenham Way scoop for you.
It's on the set pieces tomorrow.
Yeah. There's been some fresh links. We just mentioned Zaha, but there has been a couple of fresh links between Spurs and Zaha in the last month, as there seems to be pretty much every transfer window at the moment. How do you foresee where do you see his future, basically? Do you think that Spurs, if he was to leave, is a good destination for him?
Yeah, I think presumably Pochettino is part of that deal, then there's not many managers who, as a young player, or he's not that young anymore, but a player with still potential to really push on.
What is he, 24?
25 now. 25, yeah.
Okay, so you'd say that Klopp's ticking, isn't it, a little bit?
Which is why I think this summer or next summer is kind of the moment where he and other clubs will need to decide whether he is ready to make that step again. Obviously at United didn't quite work out, but he was a lot younger then. Obviously a lot depends on what happens with Palace for the remainder of the season. If they go down, then I can't see him staying at all. But he did sign a new contract last summer, which obviously we know doesn't mean loads in terms of a long-term stay, but I think the club are in a position where they won't need to sell financially, unless it's a ridiculous offer, which I don't think Tottenham are the type of club to really go massively bid on that, particularly a player like him who's not got Champions League pedigree or anything like that. So it could be a case where he has to kind of say, right, I want to go, and maybe put in a request to leave, which would be a really big step, I think, being a homegrown player, so not something you do lightly. I don't know Dan's view on whether that will.
I think it was a strange. It was a strange summer. Link. It came about a couple of weeks ago. It just popped up nowhere. A few newspapers ran it and said Spurs want to sign Zaha again, but it felt like that ship had kind of sailed, because I think this Zaha was the speedy winger that Poch wanted 2 years ago, and in the end Sissoko got the gig, if you like. But obviously he's developed into a very different sort of player, and whether you like him or not, he seems to be valued by Poch as this player who kind of can transition in stretch games between defence and attack, and play a kind of in a midfield three or a midfield two even, and actually do a job even if
he's not doing that job that well. He's obviously not the player that Zaha was intended to be, had Spurs signed him. And then there was this strange window where Spurs didn't try and sign a quick winger, and then Lucas Moura came to be that man, and obviously there's lots of competition now, and it looks like there's Son, Lamella and Moura going for one place, as we've already said. So unless one of them leaves, it would just seem quite strange to then add Zaha to the squad as well.
Maybe it's the phasing of, out of Son.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? That would
surely not.
Replacing Son with Zaha would not seem to be, to me, to be a forward step.
No.
The only thing I can think of is that obviously Llorente isn't long for this world, club rather. He's not dying.
You can explain it, Bob.
I'm dying, Poch. So possibly, you know, that possibly the plan might be to use kind of Son and Zaha as the sort of backup forwards when Kane's not fit, but who knows? I find it hard to imagine that, as Greg says, it would cost a lot of money to sign a player who hasn't got Champions League experience, hasn't really got a huge amount of international experience, so he must have played a fair bit for the Ivory Coast now. But it just seemed a strange deal to do when Crystal Palace would want, I guess, upwards of 35 million.
It's the link, isn't it? It's an easy link to make, and until it happens or doesn't happen categorically one way or the other, it's just going to keep coming up. Start Sessegnon until something happens with that. It's just going to rumble on, and there's another link for Sessegnon today, isn't it? Before we talk about Rochdale, and there's certainly not a lot that we're going to talk about with Rochdale.
No.
Although, no, let's quickly do Rochdale now. So, since we recorded last Monday, just before the Man City game against Wigan, and a shock result for Wigan, putting them out, and that suddenly opened the door a little bit, or the door is certainly a lot more open than it was this time last week, let's say. Chelsea's still in it, United's still in it, but apart from that...
Yeah, it always feels a bit pathetic, but it did feel like that City result kind of changed everything, because from a Spurs point of view, you would fancy them to beat Rochdale, you'd then fancy them to beat either Swansea or Sheffield Wednesday in the next round, and then there's a semi-final and final potentially at Wembley, and I know they won't be home semi-final or a home final, but a stadium they're very familiar with and have already beaten United at. Chelsea won there, of course, the only defeat Spurs have suffered at Wembley this season.
Apart from
West Ham, the only league defeat Spurs have suffered. So, but even so, that was a very different Spurs team at Wembley. So, Man City were the only team that really still held a fear factor, I think, given what they're doing to everyone. And I think without them in the competition, there's absolutely no reason why Spurs can't win it now. I think Man City were a reason. You'd look at them and say, oh, well, it's City. So, all the more reason to go for the cup. Although, conversely and almost ironically, I think Pochettino's main reason for not going for the cup is that he feels like it's not prestigious because it's too dependent on luck. So maybe he'd have preferred to play City and Chelsea and United. But there you go.
It's wrong.
It's definitely there for the taking. But then I think United, particularly with Mourinho in charge, I think the same. You know, if Chelsea end up with an interim manager for the last 10 games of the season, he'll be desperate to win a trophy, whoever it is. So it's still going to be tough.
Yeah, it does still feel like the same blocks are in place, and they're all internal rather than external in a way. Well, the lineup that we play. We shoot ourselves in the foot a little bit when it comes to this. Expected minutes for Foyth, who, by the way, I'm really loving. I really love Foyth. Don't know why. I think he's obviously a 4-year-old boy in some senses. He's ridiculously small. But he's great fun.
Yeah, I haven't really got into him as you have, to be honest.
Next time. I feel like you need cup fever. You need Foyth fever.
Yeah, I mean, Pochettino went big on Foyth the last press conference and said he was going to be one of the best defenders in Europe. And we all were a bit suspicious because it was kind of the day that this story had broken about Alderweireld leaving the club, potentially. and Pochettino was like, all the other centre backs are amazing. But then the last time he said someone was going to be one of the best defenders in the Premier League in Europe, it was Cameron Carter-Vickers, who is now on loan at Ipswich. So Afoyth, I think, is very good on the ball. I'm just worried that he's not really been tested, and when he has been tested on the odd occasions, looked a bit wobbly and he's been put under pressure.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I think he'll play. Alderweireld, hopefully more minutes if he's fit. Rose, obviously, I still think Wanyama could do with some minutes.
Yeah, definitely.
And
Sissoko.
Llorente,
if he's off his sick bed.
Yeah,
yeah, it's going to be about as what we expected, yeah, really. So the Supporters Trust met with Daniel Levy and
the board, board to board.
The board on Tuesday, so last week.
Yeah.
A few things discussed. Before we talk about the stadium, there were some quotes in there that were quite pertinent about transfer policy for the summer, particularly outgoings. And they said, was it Levy that said, nobody who Poch... Fucks that completely. What is
he said the club won't sell anybody that Pochettino doesn't want to sell.
Exactly what I said, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
Yeah. But it's similar to what they said around about this time last year when the Walker stuff was starting to come out, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been the club's message for some time, probably dating back to the point where Poch signed the new contract and went from head coach to manager. The policy's been that the club doesn't sell anyone he wants to keep. Which I think is great to hear, and it was also great to hear that Levy say that Pochettino's the best manager he's had in 16 years at Spurs, and it was good to hear him say that they see eye to eye on strategy. Although I do think we should be careful with that statement, because I think it's very easy to say, in the case of Walker, for instance, oh, well, he didn't often play three games in a week, he wanted to leave, Mauricio doesn't want to keep anyone who doesn't want to stay here, there was fitness issues, and so therefore the club was happy to sell him. And the same could be true of Alderweireld this summer, for instance. If he was to go, the club would say, well, we've got a good price for a 29-year-old who's had a couple of injuries. And if Rose was to go, the club would say, well, we've got a good price for a 27-year-old who's had a lot of injuries. And I'm not saying that those justifications aren't valid, but I think until someone like Kane or Eriksen, who obviously is so integral to the club, until someone like that is kept when there's serious interest, then we should treat that statement with not scepticism, but we shouldn't necessarily take it at face value.
I think Levy's being clever there, though, isn't he?
It's clever.
Nobody would want Bale to go. Nobody wanted Modric to go. Certainly not the manager. Same with Carrick, Berbatov. Those managers wanted those players to stay.
Exactly.
And he's basically saying we're not selling Kane, in a way, isn't he?
Well, the thing is, I think the point I'm trying to get at, Paulie, is that you could almost make a case for anyone in the first team squad being sold for a certain amount, with the exception of, I think, Kane and probably Eriksen at this point. So any other member of the squad could potentially go, and the club could still say, well, Mauricio said that was okay, so therefore we're not a selling club, we're only doing what the manager has sanctioned. But you know, is until Real Madrid or whoever try their damnedest to sign Kane and Spurs say no, then it's difficult to say that that's the case. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's kind of layered, isn't it? He's saying, and he's not firmly committing to anything at all, really. Certainly not as much as what.
I'm not saying that the club would lie about that, but I'm saying I think Pochettino is. I mean, Pochettino, I read this story from his book actually, when he says that when he was retiring from a player at Espanyol, he was very nearly considered for the president's role at the club. Which is really weird, because obviously he ended up sometime after being the manager. But you can't imagine a player going and sort of being in a kind of chairman-president role.
Yeah.
But then I think Pochettino, even though he says stuff like, oh, you know, I don't deal with contracts, which is a kind of well-worn line for managers. I think he thinks more about the finances and the business side of the club than any other manager Levy's ever had. So I can well imagine them having a conversation and Pochettino saying, is Alderweireld value for money at X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, yeah.
And if Levy said no, Pochettino would therefore say, okay, in that case, he can go. Whereas I think Redknapp or someone like that would have just said, you do the business, I don't give a damn, I want to keep the player, you know, pay him what he wants, for instance. So it is really layered and it's a difficult one. But yeah, you've got to imagine that means Kane is not being sold.
Yeah, one would hope and imagine. Some quotes about the stadium as well. They are the working title, if you like, at the moment is the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, is that correct?
Yeah, until a naming rights partner is agreed.
You've got some thoughts about the wider context of this, haven't you?
It got me thinking because I was in Turin a couple of weeks ago, and obviously that is known as the Alliance Stadium because of a naming rights deal, but a lot of people still call it the Juventus Stadium, and even apparently a lot of the locals just call it the Stadium, like Il Stadio, or whatever. So I did wonder whether the club is keen to kind of kill the White Hart Lane name, and I suspect they are.
Why? Why would they want to do that?
Well, because I think it weakens their position in terms of securing a naming rights partner.
But
if they'd said the stadium will continue to be referred to as White Hart Lane until we get a naming rights partner, then there's every chance fans would continue to refer to it as White Hart Lane forever.
Yeah, fair.
Even when a naming rights deal is agreed. If we have a few months of calling it the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and then it becomes, for example, the Alliance Stadium, and those two become interchangeable, I think that is a more positive outcome for Alliance, for instance, than if the White Hart Lane name kind of lives on.
Well, they're looking at changing the station, aren't they, from
White Hart Lane. Yeah, the station will also become Tottenham Hotspur rather than White Hart Lane.
Interesting. It is an interesting one. I suppose it's quite similar to Selhurst Park in a way, isn't it, in the nearest train station. That what it's been known for as for hundreds of years, I'm sure, like decades, dozens of years, if you like. How would it feel? Is there any plans for Crystal Palace to change anything around it? Because it's quite an old-fashioned place now, isn't it?
The club released plans, before Christmas, I think, which is still very much in the planning stage, but to kind of expand the current stadium, so not a wholesale kind of structural change, but redeveloping one of the stands, basically, increasing capacity, but. Yeah, it's very early stage at the moment, but I think the problem was that the club didn't actually own the ground until quite recently, so they had to sort that out first, and only now they're beginning to put plans in place. But it'd be good to see something in the future, because it could definitely do with a lick of paint, I think.
How would you... Because at the moment, Spurs fans seem to be suffering a little bit of a... kind of an identity crisis, in a way. There's a recognition that we need to move on. There's a recognition that we need a bigger stadium to compete... at the level that we have been, and I don't think anyone's under any illusions that we've probably been punching above our weight certainly in the last 2-3 years. But there's also quite a sense of loss and an acknowledgement that White Hart Lane was a fortress when we left it, and it's got this new place has got a hell of a lot to live up to. So there's risk involved in that as well, perhaps not financial, but as fans, would you rather see Crystal Palace move into a new era in a huge brand new stadium, or something like, I don't know, St Mary's, something that's a decent size? Or would you just want to stay in Selhurst Park forever because that's what you've known forever?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think with the Tottenham example is probably, again, from an outsider's point of view, the best of both worlds, because it is going to be on the same site, isn't it? It's not like a West Ham situation where you're moving kind of miles away. Yeah, not too far in the grand scheme of things, but obviously... you hear the tradition of kind of going to the same pubs, the same journey to the stadium. So Tottenham aren't losing that, at least. I think with Palace, if the current plans do go through, I think, again, similarly to Tottenham, that would be ideal, because it's kind of talking about a modest enlargement, nothing crazy. I don't think the demand's there quite yet for 70,000 gleaming bowl. But and I think the thing with Selhurst Park, people obviously, rightly so, it is kind of run down and that, but there is a charm to it and those old stadiums, which would be a shame to lose. So I think if the club, in Palace's case, can kind of retain that while also kind of increasing modestly increasing the size, maybe freshening things up a little bit, would be the best of both worlds. But yeah, from a Tottenham point of view, I think it could have been a lot worse, really. The fact they aren't staying on the same site is a big thing. And I think, as you said, maybe there is a sense of loss and there's disappointment with that, but I think it is widely acknowledged, isn't it? You two will tell me if it's not, but it is a positive step for the club in terms of its overall growth and maintaining its level at the moment as a club that can compete for trophies.
Yeah, it's. I think there's also a sense of loss for the kind of the league as well, because there's great stadiums that are going.
Yeah.
So if Everton got, I think Everton were granted some sort of permission this year to start the process, which is, you know, step one of hundreds, it seems. But Goodison is one of those places, like White Hart Lane. I mean, this is it. White Hart Lane is just literally no more now. Mm. There's nothing left. Yeah, it's horrible, because you sometimes you forget, in a way, because of the pictures that come out. It is incredible, but just think what used to be there, and that was there for fucking ever. But nearly, I'd say, what, half of the stadiums in Premier League now are brand new, I would say. Can't be far off. I mean...
Yeah, I don't know the number.
We look at teams like Leicester and Southampton, Huddersfield, Brighton, all brand new stadiums there. Man City, it's a good one. Arsenal, Chelsea are getting in. So it's just a kind of a gradual, seems to be a gradual loss of it. And in the end, everyone's going to have these stadiums that are a bit. I mean, you could, if apart from the colour of the seats, you couldn't tell the difference between St Mary's and the Walker Stadium at Leicester.
Well, yeah, that was I think the point I was just about to make, that they do. I'm hoping the Spurs is going to be different, because obviously the club's made a big song and dance of saying this is going to be the best stadium in London, if not the country, and they really do want it to be special. But you do feel like some of these kind of middle of the road stadiums, and this isn't really a criticism of the clubs because they've done a good job, obviously, but they don't feel particularly unique when you're there. Mm. You do, here I'm at St Mary's, I'm at the King Power, I'm at the Amex. There is a certain feel to all of them, so I do know what you mean there.
It's just a bit. It's natural, and it will happen. And in 50 years, they'll all have their own, you know, charm and whatever, and scuffs on the wall and stuff. And that's what it's all about. But it's just, it does feel like everyone's suddenly gone, oh, this, if we're going to do it, we need to do it now.
I think a lot of it as well is the memories, isn't it, that you create. So as you're saying, 50 years, when Tottenham have won 10 Champions Leagues, then no one will probably be worried about the White Hart Lane, because they'll have their own. But at the moment, it's so new and alien, isn't it?
Alternative reality. We're in the conference with a 60,000 seat stadium. I mean, it's just a last couple of notes on the stadium before we wrap up. Levy said it was running slightly delayed because of adverse weather. I'm presuming that's not because of today and yesterday's snow, is it?
He said, and it's tricky because these aren't direct quotes, they're the minutes of a meeting.
Yeah.
But he said there was a minor delay to adding the roof because of strong winds and chilliness or something.
Right.
So I think...
Chilliness?
just general chilliness. Just chilly air.
Okay.
So I do, I think...
Not supplying gloves.
They have also said that it remains on schedule, though. They've also confirmed that there'll be... Which I think most people already knew and was already out there, but there'll be a kind of run of away games at the start of next season. I think we've even done that on the pod before. So it'll be a kind of Liverpool scenario where you maybe don't play at home until after that September international break.
Yeah, which makes sense. And I'm kind of fine with as well.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
That's fine. Okay, wrap up. Nothing else to add?
There were some listener questions.
I think we covered most of them. So I had a little look while we were recording.
There was a good one from Adam Nathan, which I quite liked.
Okay, go on.
Cup final, everyone's fully fit, but Rose isn't back to last season's form. What's your team?
Oh, okay. Cup final.
Cup final. I'm assuming... Christmas
Day. No. Cup final. Lloris, Trippier, Alderweireld. Oh, this is a good question.
It's a good question.
No, I'm going to go Alderweireld, Vertonghen,
you're going Alderweireld?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm being ruthless. Poor Dave is being left on the bench. Dembele, Dyer, Son, Eriksen, Ali, Kane.
Okay.
I mean, the obvious one is dropping Son out for Davinson Sanchez, isn't it?
Well, I'm going three at the back.
Three at the back.
But I think Poch has kind of regained trust in the 4-2-3-1, hasn't he?
A bit, yeah.
I think I would go... Yeah, I think cup final, I'm having Lamella in there, mate. Just because it's an Adam Nathan question as well, I know. It's Adam Nathan for Son.
Right, okay.
Done.
All right, fair enough. Great, good question. Let's finish up. Greg, thank you so much for coming on again. Where can we find your work and where can we find you on Twitter?
So both the same place really, because the work is on Twitter, so I'll make it easy for everyone by just going to @GregLeeFootball.
Superb. Dan_KiddiePP as usual.
KP.
Why haven't you done that?
Because it's not, that's not my name.
No, it's KP.
Yeah, but it's
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye.